Has anybody ever been to the Discovery before? By any chance, show of hands. One, two. No one. Okay, by way of introduction, did I speak to you guys? In your home country, or are you shit
whatever?
I can't have you. Woo! Woo! Okay, but we have an introduction. My name is Gabriel Friedman, aka Rav Gab, originally from Bristol, Woodley, New York, currently living in the Holy Land, and let's get cracking. So this is Discovery. I'm going to give a little introduction before we can jump into anything, is the following. If you have seen this before, I have one request, and that is, don't be that guy. Everyone knows who that guy is. When I saw this one, we hate you, keep it down, right? So this is what we're going to do. You guys drive yet or not yet?
Yeah.
Legally. Yeah, okay. Where do you live? Oh, is that like 15 or something like that?
I'm 17.
No, but I'm single. Can you start at 15?
Yeah.
15 is
like
a permit or something like that. It's so messed up. Hey, I'm from Alabama. We do it at 7. Right, okay. So, for those who don't just drive, raise your hand if you drive. Keep your hand up if you've ever had a problem with your car. Keep your hand up if you've ever bought your car to a mechanic yourself. Keep your hand. Nobody. Oh, one. And do you know anything about cars? Good, excellent. So let's use you. You go ahead. You have your car. It's a little bit messed up. What kind of car is it?
It's a 2004
Corvette. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm very proud of you able to say that out loud. Very good. Anyway, so you got yourself this car. You bring it to the mechanic, and you want to tell him the problem. You're like, you know, you drive in. He goes, no, come closer. You know, it's in Israeli, of course. Closer. You know, you're doing the five downs.
No.
Oh. Close sale. And the guy comes, you're like, oh, you're going to kill the guy. Then he goes, stop, you know, what do you do? You're like, okay, fine. And then you're about to tell him the problem. You're like, the problem is, and he goes, shh. Walks over to your hood, puts his hands on the hood. Yeah, let's see, a discombobulator, that's going to be $700. How do you feel? You trust the guy.
Yeah.
You trust the guy who doesn't even look under the hood. Who just puts his hands above it and goes, yeah, it's probably this. They'll pay.
Probably. How do you guys do that?
Let's talk about a mechanic you don't know.
No.
Then would you be okay with it?
Maybe not.
Maybe a little. You're catching on with this thing, right? Maybe a little bit. Like, maybe I shouldn't be okay with it? I don't understand. What should I say? If you're going to fix your car, you're about to pay $700. If it's your father's credit card, it's one thing. But if it's your own money, then all of a sudden you start to think. Right? You start to think like, oh no, I don't want to have to spend such money. Do you want to have a feeling of maybe I know he knows what he's talking about, or I have faith in him? Which one? Faith or knowledge?
Faith. Knowledge.
In your mechanic, faith or knowledge?
Knowledge.
Right? Okay, knowledge. Now, what about living your life? We live our life, and I don't know everyone's backgrounds. I'm judging by just looks, and it could be that's not okay. Did many of you grow up in a similar to what I did? In other words, like modern Orthodox type of upbringing, very yeshivish upbringing, very secular. Let's do it this way. Who grew up in a home, if you feel comfortable saying this, you don't have to answer, where you didn't grow up in a religious home? Didn't grow up in a religious home. Okay? How many grew up in a religious home? Modern. Modern plus. Modern plus plus. Okay, yeah, yeshiva light. And yeshiva, there you go. Right? And ultra orthodox. Anyone? Any ultras? Yeah?
No, I'm not ultra orthodox.
Yeah. Where are you from? You speak Yiddish, innit? Okay. Moving along. Yiddish? Yo, stat Yiddish? Yeah, how do you say in Yiddish satellite dish? Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. We don't have those. All right, so now, let's take a look at the following. If you grew up in a home similar, which the majority I see from hands were at least religious-esque, and some not, that's fine, but if you did grow up in that, how many of you actually know that this thing called the Torah came from Hashem? In other words, you know it came from Hashem. And if I asked you to come up in front of the room right now, you'd be able to present to everyone clearly that we know this Torah came from Hashem. Anybody feel comfortable saying that they know, even if not comfortable to get up here because you're uncomfortable, but feel comfortable in their knowledge that they could give it over if they needed to? So interesting. When I ask cars, everyone's like this. When I ask this question, we have like a couple of these. What's this? Who thinks they can do it? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Does anyone actually feel comfortable to get up and do it? Okay, tell us. How do you know the Torah came from Hashem?
When we look at what Hashem is telling us in the Torah, some of the things that he says, it doesn't make sense for a human to say. So,
like?
When Hashem tells us exactly how many animals are going to be kosher with these certain restrictions, and throughout all of history and all of time, we're never going to find another one like this that only chews their cud and has split hooves. It's a wild accusation for humans. And for something that's beyond time, it makes sense that only something beyond us could actually make that accusation.
Excellent. Very, very good. In about 30 seconds, you just gave one of the classes that you're not doing today. So everyone just got it. That's it. Settled right there. Very, very good. Very good. Now, everyone else should also have this information, and there's a good chance if you went to any sort of Jewish day school or Hebrew Academy or whatever type of thing, or plus, then you've learned this before. The question is whether you connect it or you don't connect it. Do you understand what I mean by that? There's a lot of information. Someone who grew up in a religious home, you have so much information that you don't tap into because you don't recognize you have the information. Does anybody get what I just said? You actually have the answers to almost all the questions. The only problem is that you don't realize you have them. So it's nice to have them, but if you don't bring them to the forefront of understanding, then it won't help you. Get it? Now, in Judaism, just like with a car, it's important to you not to spend $700. What about spending your life doing something? Doesn't it make sense that you should get some sort of knowledge? You should actually work it out a little. So that's what we are going to attempt to do. Now, you take a look and you find anyone here from their families from Iran. Nobody. Iran. No? Same place. All right. Anyway, so you know that Iran is a very close friend of Israel. And I guess you don't know what I'm talking about at all. Let's start over. They want to destroy us. And they're very open about it. They're like, we will kill you all. Or they say, nah, because, which means we will kill you all. And essentially, you can imagine that Israel has a few spies hanging out in Tehran. Tehran's in Iran, right? You can imagine that to be the case, yes or no? Israel's got a couple spies hanging out there. Imagine we were to get a message from our spy that said the following. Dear Israel, it's me, your spy. I found their nuclear reactor. It's located at the following coordinates, longitude, latitude, and it gives like the whole thing. I can shut off the nuclear reactor at 12 a.m. on Wednesday. Send the bomber jet planes in. Signed, your spy, Yitzhak. P.S. Falafel here, not as good as Tel Aviv. Imagine Israel got that message. How certain would we want to be that actually came from our spy?
Very.
Very certain. We want to be like very certain. Let's see, like best case scenario, and it wasn't the spy, we just spent like a couple billion shekel on warfare. And then we're like, we're so sorry, you know? Have a good day. Worst case scenario, you just started World War III. We want to make sure that it actually came from our spy. So how do we know? So there's a little organization here in Israel called the Mossad. Have you heard of the Mossad?
Yeah.
If for those unfamiliar, if you know, perhaps the FBI or CIA or MI6 or like intelligence agencies that basically have spies and whatnot and work in that type of field. We asked them, how do you know if you get a message from your spy that it actually came from your spy? And they said, we have a way of testing it. When we get a message, we have five different ways of verifying. They're called fail safes. What are they? I'm going to write them down and then we'll break them down. Here we go. Number one is something known as codes. Number two, ID info. Number three, outside verification. Too long a word, I can't spell it. Number four, transmission, same idea. And number five is known as control. These are the five different ways that we verify if a message actually came from our spy. Number one, codes. Everyone knows Spy School 101. If there's no code in your message, it's not from a spy. Number two, there's got to be identifying information in the message that no one could have known but the spy. You understand? Because if they want to pose as the spy to cause some sort of issues, we got to make sure there's something in there. P.S. Falafel, not as good as Tel Aviv, right? No one could have used that except for him or whatever the example would have been.
outside verification, are there any other spy agencies that can corroborate this point when he says, here is the coordinates, longitude, latitude, where I found the nuclear reactor? We check on the agencies, on the maps, on the digital, satellite imagery, and we find that there's a 7-Eleven. It's the middle of the Iranian desert. There's nothing there for miles and miles except for a 7-Eleven. You can imagine it's a cover for something. They're not coming out with a new Slurpee called the bomb. You understand? Outside verification. Number four is transmission. How do we know it's passed on accurately? He said, I can shut it off at 12 o'clock. Maybe he said, I can't shut it off, but it got smudged. Was it transmitted properly? And number five is control. Control is less of a level of verification of the spy, but more so, what's his tracker? Can he pull off what he says he's going to do? Just because a spy goes to spy school doesn't mean they can do every particular job. Maybe this is something outside of his reach. Has he done this in the past? Can he pull off what he says he's going to do? Are we clear? Everybody get it? Now, how many of them do you need to send out a mission? They said if you have codes, ID info, and a little outside verification, that is enough to send out a mission. But if you have all five of them, then you can be more certain that this message came from your spy, then your mama is your mama. Or they said, ima shalichem, ima shalichem. All right, to actually get this down. So we have a message. What's the message? The message is called the Torah. Who is our presumed spy? Don't say Moshe. Who's our spy? Who? Who's our spy? Hashem. We have a message. We want to know, did this message actually come from our spy called Hashem? Or did it come from someone else? Everybody get what's going on? That's what we're going to be doing. Now, you're not doing the full on. You're doing three out of five. You did one of them already in the 2 minutes. But we're going to be doing today Seven Wonders of Jewish History, ID Info. Oh, wait a minute. That's the class, ID Info. You just did it. Anyway, and control. That's the ones you're going to be seeing over here. We're going to start off with something known as outside verification. Truth be told. I think each one of them by themselves is saying something very big. You don't even need all five of them. But we're going to take a look and see, did this book called the Torah actually come from Hashem or not? So let's take a look and see. This is, my friends, this is what we call outside verification. Outside verification means where we're seeing outside that maybe something the Torah writes. You can't prove the Torah from the Torah, right? And Moses spoketh to the people saying, the Torah is true, therefore it's true. But you can prove it from the Torah if you take a look at what the Torah says and see if there's a pan out. Let's take a look and see what we're talking about. So we have a conversation that goes on some time ago between the guy named King Louis XIV and Blaise Pascal. Anyone heard of these people? King Louis XIV, Blaise, when did they live?
14th century.
You're the closest so far.
15th century,
you're getting closer. Even closer. There you go. The 1600s or the 17th century. And what happens is, King Louis XIV was a king and an agnostic. Agnostic means, I don't know if there's a God. Maybe there is, maybe there ain't. I don't know. But his brother over there, Blaise Pascal, you may know him from math. If you learn Pascal's triangle, Pascal's theorem, you might know him from philosophy, Pascal's wager. He was a Christian philosopher, mathematician, very much believed in God. And he had conversations all the time. He would say, how do you know there's a God? This is how you know. How do you know there's a God? This is how you know. How do you know this? How do you know this? Till one day he's like, enough. Pascal, I want you to give me clear evidence of a supernatural force. So he says, you want clear evidence of a supernatural force? The Jews, your majesty. The Jews. Says a Christian philosopher to an agnostic king, you want to know how we know there's a supernatural? There's something called God? The Jews. What do you mean by that? What's supernatural about us? Okay, the fact that we exist, and I was wondering, like, how many of you wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and go, supernatural? You probably go, like, supernatural! And then you realize it's your roommate. But the point is that what we find is the fact that we still exist today. Let's take a look at our boy, Mark and Mark Twain, a nice, beautiful anti-Semite. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound, and splendid, and faded to dream stuff, and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other people have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned down, they said, in twilight and hour vanished. The Jews saw them all. Beat them all! And now what he always was. It's given no decadence, no firmness of age, no weakness of his parts, no soldiers of energy, no doubling of learned aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? That, my friends, is a very heavy statement. Right? How about another one we have over here? A quote from someone by the name of Leo Tolstoy Nikolaevich. Those of you familiar with Russian writers, also a non-Jew. The Jew is the emblem of eternity, whom neither another sword nor torture of thousands of years could destroy, whom neither fire nor sword nor inquisition able to wipe at the face of the earth. He was the first to produce the oracle of God. He has been for so long the garden of prophecy and transmitted to the rest of the world. Such a nation cannot be destroyed. The Jew is as everlasting as is eternity. Yeah! The fact that we exist today, my friends, is unbelievable. Here we are today, after all these years of trying to get rid of us time and time again. Right? Bottom line is, we're still here. We still exist. Now, you understand we have something called the Torah. Now, this Torah, we have two options. Some people think that it came from a god, and that's their prerogative. If you want to believe that, you can. That's cool. But others understand that there was no god. There is no god. And this book called the Torah actually didn't come from a god. It came from either an individual or a group of individuals, right? Those are two options, right? From something supernatural, a god, or from a person, or from a group of people. Yes?
Yes?
I'm going to suggest it actually came from people. Thank you all for coming. Okay, I'm going to suggest that it actually came from people. I'm going to try to show that to you. If I succeed, then we're going to have to change this from discovery to discovery. Undiscovered. If I don't succeed, foreshadow. And maybe the reason why I'm not succeeding, foreshadow, is because it actually didn't come from people, foreshadow. But it came from a foreshadow, supernatural force. Now let me make it very clear. The Torah came from God. Those are for those who are unclear. But I'm going to try to show you it came from man. You will see how absurd and ridiculous that sounds and then realize that it came from God. Everybody clear with the model? Yes? Okay, so I want you to clear your minds of all Torah. That was quick. Now, I will be Moses, naturally. And you will be my committee. Right, let's begin. I want to start a religion. I want to call it Judaism. I want him to go, why Judaism? I had a cat named Judaism. Back off. Right? I want to start a religion called Judaism. And what's a religion without a prophecy? So we're going to start with a strong prophecy. We will tell people that we are going to be an eternal nation. Thank you. Thank you, committee. It's like one person that got like... Long live the king. Okay, you get, we're going to be eternal nation. Is that a good sales pitch? Yes or no? What do everybody want in this world? They want like a legacy. We're going to live forever. We're going to be here. Right? We're going to be there. Right? So we're going to be eternal nation. And where do we find this? Well, it's in my book. Let's take a look at my book called the Book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 17, verse 7. And I quote, "And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations, an eternal covenant to be your God and the God of the descendants after you." A bris olam. What does that mean, bris olam? That means we will be here. We will have a covenant between God and the people. We are always going to be here, right? Where do we find another quote? This would be in the third book, also known as Vayikra. "Thus, even while they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject or obliterate them, lest I break my covenant with them by destroying them. For I am the Lord their God. I will remember them because of the covenant I made with their original ancestors, my brother of Egypt, and the seven nations that I am being their God." So we see indeed, we are going to be here forever. Good? So far, so good? So we got a nice little prophecy going on. We have it written in a book. We're going to sell this, people, for three easy payments of a circumcision and Sabbath. You can join Jews, right? And we're going to get it going. Eternal nation. Now, if you guys were actually involved in any... Anybody learned business or is in business right now? Anybody involved? Yeah? Yes? Yeah? Okay, back to our religious orator. Let me ask you the following. I have a deal for you. You give me $1 million, and in 3 years, I'll turn it into $5 million. Are you in?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody in business or study business by any chance? Yeah. What do you say? What do you say? Give me $1 million, and in 3 years, I'll turn it to $5 million. You in? Ooh. She'd be old financial advisor. I had a contract. You're Jewish also. Okay, so let's take a look and see. You got to back it up. Tell me something, boy. How you going to do it? You think you're going to do it? How you going to do it? What's your plan? I got a plan. We're going to be an eternal nation, and I have a plan. We'll take a look and we see, like, you know how people, they have, like, an eternal national homeland, you know? We are going to have an eternal national homeland that we're going to stay in that land, and we will never leave that land. You with me? And tell me, if you stay in a land or you leave a land, where are you more likely to survive? Staying in a land or leaving a land? Staying in a land. If you know history, then we know that, even if you don't, then I'll tell you, and then you'll know. 95% of all wars are fought over land. Which means if you could hold on to your land, hold on to your land, then you'd be able to survive for a long time. So far, so good. A good beginning to the answer. Then you're going to say, how are you going to guarantee you're going to stay in the land, right? That's a good question. But I have a plan. You ready for this? We will be an eternal nation, but thank you, committee, for participating. I have a way of answering all your issues. My next prophecy is we are going to survive. You know how? Because we are going to be exiled and dispersed. Good plan? Yes or no?
No.
Is exile dispersion a good plan for longevity? No. Not so much. But let's take a look and see where I read in my book. This is just a short list of places we've been chucked from. If you want to see, we have basically France, and Arab lands. If you look and you search and you will find it, we've been chucked time after time. But God will be waiting over and over and over. We're gone. And take a look and see where we find an idea. Actually, this is written down a little bit of a delay, but not so bad. Here we go. Take a look at the following idea. Come on, get on in there. We believe you. We believe you can move. And there you go. Says the book of Leviticus, and you I will scatter among the nations at the point of my drawn sword, leaving your country desolate and your city in ruins. Got that? We're going to be scattered. Having another one. I appoint heaven and earth as witnesses for you today that you will be cut off quickly from the land you are crossing the Jordan to acquire. You shall not remain there long, for you shall be wiped out. God shall scatter you among the peoples. You shall be left few in number among the nations where God will lead you. Lovely bedtime story. Nighty night, sweet nightmares. So indeed, we start to see this thing, this exile and dispersion. If you were really my committee, and I was trying to get this off the ground, I'm like, guys, I got a great idea. We're going to be here forever. Prophecy 2. We'll be exiled and dispersed. And you'd be like, excuse me, it doesn't really work. You understand? This would be called strike number one. Strike number one, not exactly such a good plan, but I have an idea. Even though we'll be exiled and dispersed, let's take a look at other people who have been around for a very long time, and maybe we'll use their plan for survival. Like India, China, Japan, right? They've been around for a very long time. How did they survive for so long? Let's start with Japan. How did Japan survive for so long? What?
They stay in one place.
Oh, they're isolated.
Good. Japan is in the middle of Japan. You understand? If you want to get to Japan, it sounds like one day, hey, let's just go travel to Japan. It doesn't work like that. If someone wants to go to Japan, they have to make sure that they go ahead and they get on a boat, they get out there, and then they go and they travel. If something was very, as a matter of fact, in the 1600s, the Mongols tried twice to go ahead and invade Japan. What ended up happening, though, unfortunately, is it just simply didn't work. It just simply didn't work. There was a typhoon, a monsoon, knocked off the whole fleet. In which case, at the end of the day, what we find is maybe the reason why Japan survived for so long is simply because of their isolation. So let's do the same thing. We'll make our land in the middle of nowhere. You know? In a place which is very far from everything. The Middle East. Any problems? The Middle East, if you wanted to get to three continents, Europe, Asia, Africa, you had to go through Yerushalayim. You know that? Yerushalayim is the most conquered city in the world. It's been conquered in upwards of 1 million times. That's impossible. I made it up. It's about 36. But it'd be conquered and conquered and conquered. Did anyone go in the tunnel tours? Did anyone do that? Who's done it before? All of you? Mm-hmm. Yeah? So you see how it's like built upon. You have the tour guide. If you look here, you see stone. Over here, big stone. Over there, little stone. Now you understand. This is Jerusalem. As we see, over and over and conquered and built upon. So we clearly didn't use their method. What about India and China? Don't get thrown off by Nepal. How did India and China survive for so long? Large population. There's just so many of them. You understand? What are you going to do? You're going to go try to overcome them. Imagine, like, the Chinese are looking over and they see, oh, white men coming again, trying to conquer us. How many people are going to go? A million? They're over a billion! They're looking at them and go, oh, past the rights. Right? Forget about it. We're not even scared of you. And it's like, the Ottoman Empire actually held for a little bit, but that was understandable. Whether it was going to get overthrown. There's an amazing scientific concept that if you try to overcome India and China, you become Indian and Chinese. It's unbelievable. There's just too many. So we'll do the same thing. We will have such a large population, you will not be able to beat us. That would be a good plan, right? I have a better one. I have a much better one. We will be few in number. Few in number. Support longevity, yes or no? Not so much. Let's take a look and see where we actually have this written down. And the book of Deuteronomy, Devarim, and you shall remain few in number among the nations where God shall lead you. Any questions on that point? What? Okay, how are we going to survive? That's a good question. I was looking for another one. I was hoping you guys would get right away. Stars in the heavens, right? Very good. Then we have a pasuk which says explicitly, now you guys are like on, because you're in classroom mode now. You're like, and like, sit back and let's take it in. It's got to fight for this. 1 second. What are you talking about here that you're saying? The fact we're going to be fewer number? Doesn't it say that we're going to be as many as the stars in the heavens? answer to that, thank you for asking, is the next pasuk, which says what? You show me in few a number. Whereas you could have become as numerous as the stars of the heavens because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. So we see the fact that we're going to exist, we're going to live forever, we're going to be there. We're going to learn out of the... we're going to be here. But the question is, how many are we going to be? If you don't listen to the voice, this is the voice, then we have a problem. So what happens is contingent how many we're going to be. But thank you for bringing that up. So we're going to be few in number. If you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. The first mitzvah in the Torah, Peru Uravu Umaluas Arts, be fruitful and multiply, have many, many kids. And we know the average secular couple has between 1.2 kids and a dog. I know what you're thinking, where's the 0.2? The average ultra-Orthodox couple has somewhere between 12 and 48 children. So if you basically do the math, we are an ancient people, we have a high birth rate, we should have tons of Jews. But how many Jews do we actually have? Let's take a little look at a little chart of it. In the year 200 BCE, there were 30 million Chinese people. The population of China was 30 million. Today, it's over 1.3 billion. It's not even close to accurate. It's like 1.8 billion or something like that. They are rocking that sucker. There's a lot of Chinese people. Now, let's take a look at the Jews. In the year 1 CE, the population was between 6 and 8 million people. If we were to take the same growth rate, you don't have to. I'm just pointing out that they don't have such a huge birth rate. But if, even if we just took their birth rate, today we should be somewhere between 250 and 700 million Jews. How many Jews are there, though? 14 Anyone?
Million.
How much?
14 million.
About 14 million, or like that little blue line right there, right? Approximately 14 million Jews. I mean, it's crazy to think about. But let's look at it from a pie chart, because let's face it, we all love pie. We know that 20% of the world population is Chinese, 19% India, and there are the Jews. It's not accurate. It's not 0.2. That's too much. It's 0.02. In a sense of like back in the day, you know, that's probably why like every Jewish woman says, can I get a little slice? Just a little slice, please. Just a little slice, you know, because that's what we are. Then you cut them a little slice, and they take the rest of the cake and walk away. Right? Enough about me. The point is that we are very few Jews. Is this a support for longevity, for eternal, or not so much? Strike number two. Does everybody get what's going on over here? These are ideas that are written in my book. First of all, could I have predicted them? Not really, yet I did, and so far it's looking pretty good. Secondly, it contradicts logic, yet we start to see something, we're still here. But I have an idea. Even though we're exiled and dispersed, we're few in number, I have a plan to make sure we're going to survive, and that is that the whole world will hate us. Good? Not so much. Where do we find such an idea? Let's take a look in the Bible once again. And those of you who survive in the land of your enemies, I shall make so faint hearted that if leaves also behind them, they will flee headlong as from the sword, or no one pursues them, stumbling over one another as to escape a weapon, or no one's after them. So helpless, 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 we will be to take a stand against our foes. You shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemies shall consume you. All right? Again, or another quote over here, which is the same point. Here's the idea. Let's take a look from the Gemara, though, which actually brings that very intensely. The Gemara, the Talmud, which you know is given, written, we have the written Torah, the oral Torah coming together, comes on the Gemara and Pei Testament Aleph and Shabbos and says the following idea. For those of you who learn Gemara, you know, regularly, you put the she in your shiva, so then you'll know how to read this. For others, pay attention. This over here sees that first word in the line right over there, my. That one right over there, my. My, right there. So that my, it says, my Har Sinai. What is Mount Sinai? Or more accurately, why is Mount Sinai called Mount Sinai? Are you Israeli?
Yes.
What's Mount Sinai in Arabic? Oh, come on. Jabal Musa. You don't know Jabal Musa?
No.
Did you go to the army?
Yes.
Waka waka fala batuha. You know what I'm
talking
about? Anyway, so you're like this. Jabal Musa, you got Mount Sinai. Jabal is this mountain. It's Musa is Moshe. It's Moses in the mountain, right?
You weren't stationed in Jordan, yes.
All right, anyway, so go like this. My Har Sinai, why is Mount Sinai called Mount Sinai? Says the Gemara, Har Sheyarda Sin'a La'akum. It is the mountain that came down hatred to the nations of the world. Akum mazavodat kochavim umazalot. This means idolatrous, means the non-Jews. This is the mountain where hatred came out. We have been hated from our inception. I was told this good movie, I never saw it. We've been hated from the very, very beginning. It was just pretty crazy. But for the Hebrew speakers in the room, anybody speak Hebrew besides our Israeli friend? Got a couple who like, I mean Hebrew Academy? I got a little bit. You know, Shulchan, Kisei, Shalom, Degel. Okay. Anyone, a little bit. Give me a little bit. So what's strange about this? It says, why is Mount Sinai, you read Hebrew, right? Har Sinai. Har Sheyarda Sinai. What's the problem between that word and that word? Yeah, one's a samach, one's a sin, one's a yud, one's an aleph. These aren't even the same words. What are you doing? The answer is, one is Aramaic and one is Hebrew. Sinai is an Aramaic word. It is Arami for sinna. If you take a look at Unkelus, whenever it says the word sinna in the Chumash, like lo sisna v'chichavavecha, you'll see it says sinna, the samach over there. That's just the word. Mount Sinai is a mount of hatred. We've been hated from the very beginning. It's also the Sinai desert, by the way. All right, so now, you take a look, you see something really crazy, though. If you hate black people, what are you called?
Racist.
Right, if you hate a black person, you're called? Come back. You're called? Work. Racist. If you hate white people, what are you called?
Racist.
Racist. If you hate Arabs, what are you called?
Racist.
Racist. What?
Anti-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic. Why would you say that?
Because they're from shame.
Oh my goodness! Where'd you get that from? Did you just make that up?
No.
You heard that from someone?
I mean, it's factual. I don't know.
It's factual. What's factual?
That we both come from shame, so we're both Semitic.
Wow. Did anyone ever tell you that you call an Arab anti-Semite, or you came up with that in your own?
No, I don't know. I feel like just I read it somewhere.
You read it somewhere. Nice, very good. The answer's racist. Now, you're going to get Asians, what are you called?
Racist.
We'll come back to you. You'll see me in a minute. All right, now if you hate Jews, what are you called?
Anti-Semite.
Isn't that lovely? We have our own special word. What's an anti-Semite, by the way? Just to give a little dictionary. Anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism, anti-noun, discrimination against or prejudice or hostility toward Jews. But Rivka said, hold on one second. The bottom line, am I close?
Yeah.
That would have been amazing if I was right. Wouldn't that have been amazing? How does it know my name? I get it once out of like every 6,000 groups. Okay, so now, let's take a look over here. Rivka said that we know that there was a guy named Noach, right? Noah, or Noach is his real name. He had how many sons?
Three
sons. What were the names?
Shem,
Cham, and Yafet. Beautiful. Right? Okay, so these are three kids. Shem, Cham, and Yafet. Shame is where, how do you say in Hebrew? Anti-Semitism. Anti-Shemiut. Anti-Semitism, anti-Shemiut, because you're against shame. A Semite means someone who came from Sem, which is shame. Clear? Who came from shame? We got the Jews. Who else came from shame?
Arabs.
Arabian Night. The Arabs. So if you hate Arabs, you should be called an anti-Semite. And it looks like Rivka was correct. However, even though what you would say makes sense, you ready for the fancy word? Etymologically, what? Yeah, thing drop. Even though, etymologically speaking, that means the history and origin of words, etymology, you take a word, you break it down, break it down, what's its origins, where does it come from? You would think that would be true. There's only one problem here, and that's just not accurate historically. You're right. Based on the word. But where the word came into being historically, there was a German journalist by the name of Wilhelm Marr, who lived in 1879, who said, there's such a hatred towards the Jewish people, it needs a name. And he created the word anti-Semitism. Although you are right, if you break it down, it's just simply not what it actually comes from. Does everybody get that? So if you hate an Arab, you're not called an anti-Semite, you're called a racist. If you hate a Jew, you're called an anti-Semite. We have it specifically. There's a lot of words that mean just for us. Of different origin than now is used all over the world. Maybe you've heard of the word Holocaust. Greek origin, two words, holo and cost. Now what ended up happening is that we use it all over the place, but originally it was just for Jews, the first time. Genocide, only Jews. Pogrom, only Jews. Ghetto, only Jews. Money. Now, in any event, the point is that we find is that that's the concept of anti-Semitism. This is two things which I don't really want to talk about. But it's stuck there. All right, now, we've got the following idea. The uniqueness of the hatred toward the Jewish people. Universality, intensity, longevity, rationality, universality. Where around the world have the Jewish people been hated?
Everywhere.
One second. Let's let that thing load. Okay, everywhere's correct. Now, how about the idea of intensity? This thing is not working so well. So we've got like the following. Here we go. Intensity. Longevity and rationality. Intensity of the people we go to see, the fact that some people you don't like, you don't want them to be your neighbors, you don't want them to live near you, but how many of you say, like, I have a plan, let's kill them? And a little bit like, yo, dude, chill, you know? But not just them. all their family and friends. Like, it's a little bit intense. Longevity, how long have we been hated?
Since our inception,
since the very beginning. And irrationality. You ask two people, or ask one person twice, why do you hate us? They'll give you opposite answers. They're rich, they're poor, they're conservative, they're nationalists, they're atheists, they're fanatics, religious fanatics. Whatever the problem is, it's the Jew. So we go and we start to see the following idea, and that is that, hold on, let's get past that. Okay, we look at this one. We're rich and we're poor, we're beautiful, ugly, we're different, the same, we're powerful, we're down the path of leaders, all social capitalists, cake, mom, conservative, radical, religious fanatics, and atheists. No matter what the problem is, we are the scapegoat. The issue is the Jews. We're the ones who actually are the Jews. I think the number one study that was ever done on anti-Semitism was done by a Professor Cohen. Some of you may have heard him before. Professor Cohen, does anyone not know who this is by any chance? Okay, there's still hope for mankind. All right, good. Now, for the rest of you, who is that? This is someone named Borat. Have you heard of Borat before, or Ali G? This is a guy, his name is Sacha Baron. Who's English? Any English in the room? English in the room? English in the room? Anyone from England? That's what I mean by English. Nobody. Has anybody heard of England before? Yeah, anybody been to England? They've been there. It's left chest. Now, you go to England, you meet a lot of English people. This guy, Sacha Baron Cohen, English Jew, lives in England. He's a movie guy, celebrity actor, makes a lot of movies. And many of his movies are actually quite anti-Semitic. And he is very, very successful. Made tons of money. Why does he do it? He's Jewish. And he goes to shul. He goes to shul, at least Yom Kippur and whatever, and you see him once in a while in an Orthodox shul. Why does he do it? The answer is for two reasons. One, he's to make a lot of money. But another reason is because his grandfather survived a little place called Auschwitz. And he wanted to show the world that even if a person has no idea what a Jew is, they're still going to hate them. And so he came out with this idea, and that's when he came up with this hit single. Throw the Jew down the well. He goes to some random town. Do you want to see it? Do you want to watch it? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys want to be messed up? All right, here we go. So I'll show you. See, it's going to be loud. So he's an English guy, but he pretends to be from a place called Kazakhstan, and his name is Borat, and he makes these songs up, and he goes out and he says, throw the Jew down the well, so my country can be free. We must grab him by his horns, and then we'll have a big party. Now you hear the people in the background? They're like, throw the Jew down. I was like, throw the Jew down the well, so my country can be free, so his country can be free. Now they're all like, yeah. Imagine he got up there and he would have said, throw the midget down the well. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's horrible, vertically challenged. How could you talk like that? But when you go and you talk about Jews, don't worry about it. You can make fun of them. You can do whatever you want. Anti-Semitism is rampant. I had somebody not long ago, a couple weeks ago, who was here. He said, yeah, but you know, there was a time, but now like America is like a good host country and all that stuff. I said, you're absolutely right that we're in a good situation relative at the current moment. But if anybody reads any news or know what's going on or hears anything, anti-Semitism is on the rise like no one's business. People doing things out in broad daylight. We used to do it like in like hidden and whatever. Now they're just very brazen, very scary. Anti-Semitism is pretty heavy. Is this a good plan in order to make sure we are going to survive? This, my friends, will be strike number three. Everybody get what's going on here? We're going to be an eternal nation. We'll be exiled, dispersed. We'll be few in number. And everyone will hate us to the point where they want to kill us. Not exactly the best plan. Now, what would you expect from such a people? A, survive. B, not survive. C, B. B or C. Right? The answer is, would you expect them to survive? Yes or no? Exiled from their land. What happened to every other people? The Egyptians, the Roman, the Babylonian, the Persian. What happened to every people that left their land? Assimilated and gone. Not only have you been shocked, you can check from place to place to place to place to place to place. Do you know the statistic? that majority of people don't move more than 10 miles in their entire life. Anybody hear what I just said? That means you grew up in a particular... Let's talk about... Anybody here grew up in a home and you never left that house? You grew up in that house? You did that? Your whole life in that house? How long were your parents in that house?
5 years before
I was born. Were they married 5 years before you were born?
Yes.
So in other words, that was their first married house?
Yes.
And they've been there since?
Yes.
And you're still there?
Yes.
You have any older siblings?
No.
You're the oldest?
Yes.
Are you married?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think so. You know, maybe it was a shliach or something. Right? And it's like, okay, so you're not married. But you take a look, there's a good chance that if they were, they would also move within a very close radius. This doesn't really work for Jews, though, because we're chucked all over the place. So, like, it's like, yeah, like, with the, like I'm 6,000 miles from my original house. You understand? But the point is that most people are staying in one place. We're chucked all over the place, and we still exist. We're exiled and dispersed. We're few in number. We still exist. We're hated by everyone, yet we still exist. Everybody get it? This is irrational, and it doesn't make any sense. But if we were to survive, miraculously, would you expect us to be affecting the world in amazing ways? Or crawling on the floor, bleeding from every orifice, waiting to get kicked in the head again? A or B? Now, a lot of people like to think, like, we're a little messed up from pop culture. Like a small boat in the ocean. Let me tell you something. A small boat in the ocean with big waves will flip it and everyone will die. All right, so let's understand. This is my fireball. Right? It's over. Keep yelling, but those waves are going to nail you. What doesn't make you makes you strong? No. What doesn't kill you makes you bleed a lot and you'll die soon. You understand? My friend, this is crazy. The fact that we still exist is miraculous. Are we going to affect the world in an amazing way or crawl and bleed? Probably crawl and bleed. But we get to my next prophecy. We are going to be a light unto the nations. We are going to affect the world in an incredible way. Where do we find such an idea? First, let's take a look at my book, Genesis, underline. And I will bless those that bless you and curse those that curse you. Through you, all the communities of the earth shall be blessed. Or another one, it says in Isaiah, I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand and keep you. I will establish you to come into the people for a light unto the nations. Or the next one, nations shall then go by your light and kings by your radiant illumination. We are going to affect the world. Have Jews affected the world? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah? Let's take a look. This is a couple of things that Jews have done. Top left corner, who's that guy?
Albert
Einstein. Well, he was? Jewish, right? Jewish guy, he affected the world. What's this over here, middle, the bottom?
Phone.
A kosher phone, right? It's a cell phone. Cell phone technology created here in Israel by Jews. What's this coin, the bottom right? Rhymes with the Nobel Prize.
No,
that's right. The Nobel Prize. Even though the Jews are less than a quarter of a percent of the world population at 14 million out of 7.5 billion people, they've won more than 20 and 30% of Nobel Prize winnings. That is a statistical impossibility. What's this thing over here, this little smiley car? Waze, created by a Jew. Underneath, what's that? Facebook, stolen by? Created by a Jew. Drip irrigation, Jews. Think about Jews. Think about Jew. Bam. We start to see. But is that what we mean when we talk about the idea of a light unto the nations? Is that what we mean? Become a secular scientist and mathematician? My friends, we mean so much more than that. We mean something called monotheism. The fact that there's one God that runs this world, which affected it in such a powerful way. Take a look at this quote, one of my favorite quotes from John Adams, second president of the United States of America. Was a bit loony, if anyone knows historically. They said the following: I will insist that the Hebrews have done more to civilize men than any other nation. If I were an atheist and believed in blind eternal fate, I should still believe that fate ordained the Jews to be the most essential instrument for civilizing the nations. If I were an atheist of the other sect, I should still believe that chance had ordered the Jews to preserve and propagate to all mankind the doctrine of a supreme, intelligent, wise, almighty sovereign of the universe, which I believe to be the great essential principle of all morality, and consequently of all civilization. They are the most glorious nation that have ever inhabited this earth. The Romans and their empire are but a bauble in comparison to the Jews. They have given religion to 3/4 of the globe and have influenced the affairs of mankind more and more happily than any other nation, ancient or modern. And we have people running away from Judaism. Are we crazy? Maybe we're crazy. We're talking about the most glorious nation that ever lived. My friends, that's quite incredible. We're a light unto the nations. Just two more is going to bring us home. Let's take a look and see the following idea. Interdependence, should say, but interdependency. A connection or relationship between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. Jewish people and the land of Israel. There's some people that live on land. Anybody live on a farm? Anybody live on a farm, country, land, place, thing? No? All city people? You're embarrassed? Okay. There's a place called a farm. Anybody ever been to a farm? Yeah, I've been to a farm before? Where? St. Louis. Now, you know the people that live on that farm, or is this just like a... Yeah? Your aunt. Does she like it?
Yeah.
Does she love it? Yeah. It wouldn't be crazy to hear your aunt saying, I love this land. What would be crazy if the land said, I love you too. That would be a bit awkward. You understand? I mean, a little like, what you planted on that land. And the point is that interdependence, a connection between the Jews and the land. Not only do we love the land loves us. Let's take a look and see such an idea. What did the land of Israel look like before the Jews came? I've come down to rescue them from Egypt's power. I'll bring them out to a land that is a good, spacious land. To a land flowing with milk and honey. Eretz Zavat Halav. Halav Adavash, right? This beautiful, amazing land. You don't believe me from that? Let's take a look and see what Josephus says. Josephus Flavius, he was a historian, debate if he was Jewish or not Jewish, but living at the time of the temple. When I say debate, it's not a cult, but he says the following. What did the land of Israel look like? The whole area is excellent for crops, a pasture, rich in trees of every kind. A lot of fancy words. The bottom line, what he's saying is, the land is awesome. The land is this beautiful, beautiful land. What ends up happening, though, when the Jewish people end up leaving that land? Don't think nobody tried to conquer. We had the Greeks, Byzantines, Babylonians. Don't get me started on the Mamluks and the Fatimids and the Abbasids. So many people came here, tried to live here, tried to grow it up, but they weren't able to grow on the land. Says the Pasuk, what is that? So devastated will I leave the land that your enemies will live there, will be astonished. Your land will remain desolate and your cities in ruins. And I shall make the land a desolate waste that its proud strength shall cease and the mountains of Israel shall be desolate and no one will cross them. Then they shall know that I am God when I make the land a desolate waste because of all the abominable things they have done there. We start to see that this gorgeous, beautiful land that the Jewish people are living in, this shouldn't be here. This gorgeous, Jewish land, beautiful land, what ends up happening when we leave becomes this barren, desolate wasteland. The Jews are there, it's beautiful. The Jews leave, all of a sudden, it's got a problem. Let me give you a little quote over here, bring back our boy Samuel Clemens, otherwise known as?
Mark Twain.
Very good. Rivka. It says the following. Now, he came in 1867. In terms of history, that's very recent, 152 years ago. He came to Israel, and this is what he wrote. We traverse some miles of desolate country, whose soil is rich but is given wholly to weeds, a silent and mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with pomp of life and action. We reached Tabor safely. We never saw a human being in the whole route. We pressed on towards the goal of our crusade, renowned the Jerusalem. The further we went, the hotter the sun got and more rocky and bare. Repulsive and dreary the landscape became. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of a worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. No landscape exists that is more tiresome to the eye than that which bounds the approaches to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is mournful, dreary, and lifeless. I would not desire to live here. It is a hopeless, dreary, heartbroken land. Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes. It doesn't say the last quote. The last quote is, Palestine is no more of this workday world. Would everyone agree with that? Israel is not connected to the workday world anymore? Would you agree or disagree? Why? No, now. Now. Today. Are we connected to the world? Yes or no? Is there a global market that's coming out of Israel? Yes or no? Are they involved in technology and with medicine and with science? Yes or no? So you'll say to me, okay, fine. So that's a good point, but it has nothing to do with the land itself. The land itself is still barren, desolate. It's just like with scientific research. And it says, absolutely not. Does anybody remember what happened? You probably... Oh my goodness, you were young. 2000. Most of you were born in like 2002, 2003, 2004, something like that. Right? So in 2006, you guys remember? They hit the Garashut, they call it. 2004? Wow, so you were not even, you were one. It's 2004? So in 2004, you had what's known as Hitgashut, that's when there were Jews living in a place called Gush Katif. And Gush Katif was supplying the country with vegetables. All the vegetables came from Gush Katif. Not all, there were some small farms or whatever, but Gush Katif was rocking the market. So you say, fine. So they supplied Israel. It wasn't just Israel. They were exporting. That was 2006. Was it 2004? Come on. Six. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, this is probably, no, you said it with a lot of, I'm stuck. I guess he's right. He's going like this. Someone look it up quick. Anyway, so that happened with this. Put your phone away. They were exporting in upwards of $200 million a year in produce. That's a lot of money. No more of this workday world. Maybe back then, but we start to see what's going on today. This land, when Jews are not here, it stops growing. When Jews are here, it starts to grow again. That, my friends, is not just like, I love my land, but the land goes, I love you too. Now, my friends, is what we call interdependency. Now, try to imagine the Native Americans. Non-politically correct. You have Indians living in America. And they're like, uh-oh, white man is arriving. So the chief gathers everyone together and looks at the land and says, land, when white man arriveth, remain barreneth and desolateth. Do not grow herbs of any sort. Little chief, small bear, big river, let's go. And we know from the moment the Native Americans left America, America unfortunately has remained a barren, desolate wasteland. But it's not true. We have buildings and taxes. Should be better pictures, but you get the point, right? We've built up to become a superpower of the world, only second to China. We start to see, my friends, some pretty crazy stuff going on. That's a relationship between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. Last but not least, return again. Return again. Return to the comeback. Come back to me now. I can hear my own name call it. The fact that the Jewish people are going to come back to the land of Israel. Now, my friends, it's phenomenal. How do you think we're going to come back? There's never been a people that's been kicked off their land and survived, let alone come back. There were small boats, and they drowned. So I have to realize the fact we're a small boat, but here we are still again. Let's take a look and see. Deuteronomy, 5th book, and the Lord your God shall return you from your captivity. Have compassion upon you. He shall return you and gather you from among all the nations. The Lord your God will bring you into the land that your fathers inherited. You will acquire it, and he will make you even more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. Or another quote from Jeremiah. Jeremiah, for thus said God, shout with joy for Jacob, exalt with the head of the nations. Proclaim your praise and say, O God, deliver your people, the remnant of Israel, behold, I will bring them back from the northern lands and gather them from the ends of the world. The Jewish people are going to come back to the land of Israel. That, my friends, is the understandable phenomenon. We don't understand it because, I mean, you've heard it enough times, you don't really get it. How many Jews were living in Israel in the year 1900? Percentage. Anyone know? That's good. That is good. You are good. 0.5% of the Jewish people are living in Israel. Today, how many Jews live here? Percentage. How much? So I thought it was around 50%. I did a search a couple days ago, and it said about 73%. This number is for sure not right. It's not 48. It's more than 48%. More than half of the Jewish world lives in Israel today. What about it? You're just going to cash about Yoivel and Shmid, all these different things. It's a great question. You're right. I guess we have to start doing that. It's lucky. All right, so we go and see. The fact is that we go ahead and we're rocking that sucker. In 115 years, we should go back 120 years from 0.5% to over 50% Jews in the land of Israel. That's an unbelievable number. And then we start to see, as Ezekiel said, ask for you, mountains of Israel. You shall shoot forth your branches and bear your fruit for my people Israel, for the return is close at hand. For behold, I am with you, I shall turn to you, then you will be tilled and sown. The point is, Jews are coming back. Jews are coming back, and we have this barren wasteland. And we come back and we start to build up in this beautiful land. And the answer simply is because we're coming home. Do you understand the line that they say? If your grandparents, your great-grandparents would only know you say, we're going to sit opposite the coattail and learn about Judaism, God, they'd be like, what you smoking, girl? You ain't coming back in the land of Israel? That's so far away. In fact, we're coming home. Doesn't make any sense. Yet they came back, they built it up, and we got kicked out again. Came back, built it up, got kicked out, came back. Friends, it's unbelievable. But the real reason I'm talking is simply because I'm waiting for the piano solo. I'm coming home, coming home. Jesus, it's a 9 days. Anyway, point is that we find this, is that we have something like, wait a minute, temple, music, no good. Okay, so we find this. That's not sure what Shechel Bobi is fighting. Okay, you're asking us, sorry. All right, so here we go. Now we're going to come back to the land of Israel, my friends. That's above and beyond. It doesn't make any sense. What? But here we are. Let's take a look again and start to see, my friends, a little picture over here. We're going to be an eternal nation. Oh, yeah, we'll exile in this first few in number and we'll hate us. But don't worry, because we'll affect the whole world. The land will love us, and we're coming back to the land of Israel. Does anyone see how this kind of doesn't make any sense? Anybody get that? We take a look at this book called the Torah, and we ask, Okay, so like we're told, you grow up in a religious home or in a Jewish home, it came from God. But is there a way of like you could actually get clarity on this? You could actually know, you could work it out. And it says, take a look what the Torah says. Now, the point that Rivka made before, Rivka number one said, is a class that you're going to see in a moment, but this is a similar concept of look at what the Torah tells us. Are you jealous? You're okay. Right? There's a similar concept that we start to see over here. And that is the way in which the Torah, what does it say? Let's take a look and see from outside verification, does it play out what it said is going to happen? You guys went to town yet? Like shopping, things like that? Anybody went into town? Yeah, there's a place called Crack Square. You know what that is? Some of you know? Fine. Crack Square, for those unfamiliar, it's a place in town where the pavement's like uneven, there's a lot of cracks in the ground, and people do crack there. Now, I want you to try to imagine you go out there, all right? You're in Crack Square. What's your name? So Rivka, you go to Crack Square. So Sahaba, you go to Crack Square, okay? You're out there, and you know, you're hanging out, and someone seemingly out of nowhere pops over and just walks over and goes, yo, listen, right? Yo. Listen. In 10 minutes, listen to me. In 10 minutes, you listen, escuchas. Ishma, Isma. Listen, 10 minutes, it's gonna be a little rumble. Listen, it's gonna be a little rumble. Ground's gonna open up. 10 golden chariots are gonna pop out. They're gonna circle your head 3 times and then they're gonna fly away. Listen, okay? Yeah. Then the guy walks away. What would you be thinking? Say again?
I've heard this class before. I know what I'm supposed to be thinking.
Well, what would you be thinking?
That he's crazy.
It's good. 1 second. Were you in the very beginning? What? Were you in the very beginning of the class? When I asked, did anybody see the Discovery Seminar? Did you raise your hand?
No. Get out. I wasn't here. Right?
Okay. Welcome back. Right? So what would you respond? What would you say? The guy's crazy? What else would you think?
He's a crack addict,
guy's involved in some extracurricular activities, which now decriminalized in New York and other places of the world. Right? And you're like, what's going on, man? What's wrong with that guy? What would you then be thinking if 10 minutes later you start to feel the ground shake? And you're like, oh, mi Dios, ¿qué es esto? So you take a step back. And when we take a step back, the ground opens up. You're like, what? 9 golden chariots pop out. And you go, I thought 10. Then a 10th pops out. It circles your head 3 times, and then it flies off into the distance. You're not on any drug. You didn't do crack, PCP, LSD, weed, heroin, crack. You didn't drink anything. You didn't even eat, like, the yeshiva food. What would you then be thinking? The guy's a Navi. The guy's a prophet. Something's interesting going on up here. If you were to be in town, and randomly the ground were to open up, would that be phenomenal? Yes or no? Yeah? What brought it above and beyond, though? The fact that somebody predicted it beforehand. Everybody got that? If we were to be exiled and dispersed, what's the likelihood of our survival? More or less? Much less. The fact that we survived after being exiled and dispersed, just that itself is phenomenal. If we had to be few in number, what would be the likelihood of survival? Unlikely. Yet we survived, even with that. If you would be hated by everyone, now put them all together, exile dispersed, few in number, hated by everyone, that doesn't make any sense. And now we're going to go and be a land nation, have a connection with the land, and we're going to come back to our land. That's phenomenal. What putting above and beyond, though? The fact that every one of them was predicted before it actually happened. Everybody hear what's going on? So the next time somebody's wondering, so she's like, I don't know, did the Torah come from God? Did it come from a person? Does it make sense to you that any individual could have, or group could have been able to come up to predictions that are antithetical to reality, that contradict one another, and yet they would come true, knowing how they're going to work, and yet, at the end of the day, comes out in the fact that we're going to survive? You think it's crazy. The very fact that we have this is in of itself. We have the luxury of looking into history. At the time, you have to look forward, but here we can look back and start to see. They didn't need this class because God spoke to them. They got it. We don't have it, so we have to look back now and start to see these ideas. And once we start to see these ideas, maybe, just maybe, post-shadow, we come to understand the fact that the reason why all of this could have been predicted because it was predicted by none other than the hand of God himself. Any questions, comments, stories, jokes, attacks? Please keep them verbal on physical show in the year. Okay, well, thanks so much. Next class is at 12 o'clock, which means you got 6 minutes. Bathroom, walk up the door, make a quick left into the wall. You'll see what I mean when you get there. Make it quick, there aren't too many stalls. Come on back so we can keep things on track. Have a good day. Bye-bye. Yes.